at the movie theater, about to order some popcorn. Youngin at the register asks me, why are you here? Dang, I can't watch a movie? LOL.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today I'm going to be recapping the last couple of days of moves in the NBA, a couple of trades, some free agency signings as well, and then looking at dynasty leagues. Settings that you may need to look at if you're going to be a commissioner of a dynasty league, ways to approach initial dynasty league drafts as well. So lots to talk about in today's show. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right. The rest of this week, we're also going to be looking at a re-ranking of the dynasty rookie ranks that I did straight after the NBA draft. There's some changes in there, a few new players added into that list. I think I've got about 72 guys on that list. So I'll talk about that. And then also a final recap of Summer League, going team by team, talking about all the NBA prospects on those teams and what it means. So that is the rest of this week. Lots happening. Of course, if you do still want to be a part of the Red Rock Challenge Leagues, tons of leagues filled already, but still a few spots left. Make sure you're signing up. Go check my Twitter timeline at redrock_Beeble. You'll see a link to a Google form where you can put all your details in. There will be some emails sent out today as well for some spots in Roto, Points, and Head-to-Head Leagues. Tons of replies so far. Only a few spots left. I think we've probably got about, about 40 spots left across all of the leagues at this point. So make sure you are signing up to get some of those last couple of spots in some very highly competitive leagues. Let's talk news now across the NBA with some of the trades and free agent signings that did go down. The first one of those was one of these players who backed out of their deals, and that's Nemanja Bjelica, who had signed a one-year deal with the Philadelphia 76ers, said that then he won't be doing that. He'll be going across to Europe because he didn't like the one-year deal, but Sacramento came in and said, well, you're 30 years old. Let's give you a three-year contract for $20 million. Yes, the third year of that is non-guaranteed. Bjelica is best suited as a power forward. Of course, the Kings have 25 of those on their roster, so they're going to be going all Chicago Bulls and shoehorning him into the small forward position. Yeah, he played small forward last season when Jimmy Butler was injured, and he did pretty well at it. I just don't understand the need to get a guy who's 30 years of age. He's a solid player, Bjelica, no doubt. Got absolutely no benefit here with the Sacramento Kings. Yeah, they don't have their draft pick this season, but I just don't get it. Bogdan Bogdanovic, yeah, get him some extra minutes there. See if Justin Jackson's anything. Spoiler, he's not. But see what you can get out of that. I just don't get this Bjelica signing for Sacramento. I'd get it for pretty much any other team in the NBA, apart from this Sacramento Kings team. But that's basically the ethos of any of their signings that they have made. Bjelica played 20 minutes per game last season, was the 227th ranked guy. He's got a shot at a top 150 type of season if he can play 30 minutes, if they do go with him as that starting small forward. I would bet heavily against him being a top 100 guy. I still think we'll get Bogdan Bogdanovic and Justin Jackson playing the three there, but we know Dave Yeager. We know what his reliance is on veteran players, and Bjelica is a good player. So he is going to get some playing time there. And it'll probably be around 28, 29 minutes, maybe around that zone, which limits him, it limits Bogdanovic, it probably there in turn limits someone like Budrick Hield as well. Yes, Garrett Temple's gone. I'd imagine that Bjelica fits into Jaeger's Temple role, that veteran, solid veteran who plays 28 minutes per night. And I can see that's what Bjelica's going to do. He's not a high upside guy, late pick. He doesn't have a high ceiling. He doesn't even have that high of a floor. So he's probably not going to be a standard league type of a player, but he is, again, a very good player. I just don't really understand it in Sacramento, but that's something we should all come to be accustomed to. The Kings also got another guy who backed out of his deal, and that's Yogi Ferrell. First of all, we'd heard that Yogi Ferrell had accepted the qualifying offer. Then we heard that he turned that down, and then he signed a two-year deal with the Dallas Mavericks. And then he turned that down, and then he went back into free agency and signed with the Sacramento Kings. He has got a chance here to battle for Frank Mason to be the backup point guard on this team. I've already said that, you know, you've got Buddy and Bogdan there as the shooting guards. Iman Shumpert, amazingly, is still on this team as well. They also just acquired Ben McLemore. Not that he's going to do too much. Ferrell's a guy that had a nice stretch in his rookie season. Played 26 minutes per game, played 28 minutes per game last season, but barely cracked the top 200. I don't think he gets to 28 minutes. I don't think he gets to 26 minutes that we saw him get in his first two seasons. He averaged 10 points per game in both of those years. I just don't see it for him. Yeah, De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Bogdan Bogdanovic, those three guys are clearly ahead of him. So at best, he's a fourth guard. And depending on what they want to do with Frank Mason, Ferrell has turned 25 as well. So he's not all that young despite playing just two seasons in the NBA. I don't really see how he's going to have too much of an impact on this team unless there are some injuries, unless you're Hield or Fox or Mason. And Mason dealt with some injuries last season, clearly. So Ferrell could move into those roles, but he's not a high upside guy. I don't really think he's anywhere close to an NBA caliber starter, despite playing 82 games and starting quite a few of those last season. His assists were well down. He didn't even get to a steal per game. He shot 37% from three and 39 in his rookie year, which is obviously solid. But the role just isn't here for him in Sacramento with those other players that they do have around on this team. Let's look at another signing that took place across the weekend, and we know that it got a pretty significant laugh on Twitter because Michael Beasley, we know Super Cool Bees, he went to the LA Lakers to join Rajon Rondo, LeBron James, Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, whatever sort of nonsense team you could put together, the Lakers are doing it. Now, to be fair to Michael Beasley, he was pretty solid last season. I thought he was actually really good for the Knicks, especially when Kristaps Porzingis went down.
Porzingis.
He was able to put up some okay numbers. And in fact, he finished the year as a top 140 fantasy player in only 22 minutes per game, averaging 13 points and shot 51% from the field. That is three consecutive seasons that Beasley has shot over 50% from the field. 51 last year, 53 the year before that with the Bucks, and 52 the year before that in a short stint with the Rockets. He had a usage of 27% last season. He shot 40% on threes as well, coming off 42% the year before on threes. So his shooting and efficiency was a real problem for him back in his days in Miami. It's fine now. It's been a consistent theme with him. Now, defensively, he's not going to do much. He's not going to get steals. He's not going to get blocks. He's an okay-ish rebounder, averaged 9 rebounds per 36 minutes last season. But I thought did a pretty serviceable job for the Knicks when in his backup role and when given an extended role. The defense is always going to be a concern. Now, of course, on this Lakers team, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, LeBron James, these are the guys manning the three and the four positions, although we're hearing more talk about LeBron playing at center. I'd think they could perhaps give Beasley a shot at playing center if they're going to be playing LeBron there at times. So Beasley could be in for a decent enough role, but with Ingram, LeBron locked in as the three and four, Kuzma is the backup three and four there, Beasley's going to be that fourth guy there. And you could reasonably think that he's the guy that comes off the bench if they do go without LeBron at center lineup. He's not going to be a top 150 player this season, Beasley. He's unlikely to get to 22 minutes per game, but he can be that guy that if someone gets hurt, if Kuzma gets hurt, if Ingram gets hurt, two guys who did have injuries last season, Kuzma with his ankle and Ingram with a few different problems during the season, yeah, that he could step in and play 24 minutes for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and be a 13.6 rebound sort of scorer, and that does have short-term value. So he'd be someone that we've seen turn it on. We've seen him put up these sort of numbers again. He did it for Houston, where he averaged 13 points in 18 minutes a couple of seasons ago. He was a top 150 player in that short time that he was there. So this isn't a situation where he's going to a team that's, you know, he's got tremendous depth at that position. There is an opportunity for him to play some minutes, but it's more going to be as an injury replacement guy. I think he's probably in the rotation from day one, especially if they go small a lot, maybe pushing Ivica Zubac out of the rotation. But Beasley's efficiency is up. He's shooting better. The defense is not great. We know that. But it's fun. Look, I think this is a much better signing than the Lance Stephenson one. I think it's a better signing than spending $9 million on Rajon Rondo as well, to be honest. I think that Beasley can provide something there. He probably is a little bit too close in terms of skill set to what Kyle Kuzma brings as an offensive-only bench-type piece. Not as good as Kuzma and clearly not as young. Beasley's are going to turn 30 at some point during this season, but far from a terrible pickup from the LA Lakers. And I think there will be times this season where he does have some sort of fantasy value. There were a couple of trades that went down. Jared Dudley was traded from Phoenix across to the Brooklyn Nets in exchange for Darrell Arthur. Darrell Arthur, who'd come across in that Kenneth Faried trade, he will be waived by Phoenix. Dudley moves across to Brooklyn. He said that he's not all that interested in a buyout. He's not going to be playing many minutes, if any, in Brooklyn. We know that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is their starting power forward. Kenneth Faried is there as well. Jared Allen's in at center. Dudley's going to be more of a 14th, 15th man type of a player in Brooklyn. Look, he was solid last season for Phoenix. He did what he needed to do when he was on the court. He played well. He's not an awesome fantasy guy by any stretch of the situation, but he comes across there on an extremely bloated contract, and he's just not going to see the court all that much. They've also got Janan Musa, who can play at the four. Also, they signed Trevion Graham, who can be a small ball four. Rowdy Rodion's Kuroks is there. So I can see Dudley getting a few minutes in maybe 30 games for the year. Very, very little there. Darrell Arthur, of course, going to be waived in Phoenix, which opens up some playing time for Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris. Mainly because I think they're going to be going with a lot more small ball, TJ Warren at the four. Dudley probably wouldn't have played too much there, although he did, again, see some minutes in Phoenix last season. So that is that deal. The Nets also get themselves a draft pick in the trade, just continually just acquiring assets. A second round pick they get in this deal. So congratulations to the Nets, just getting a contract for honestly nothing, really. They absorb Dudley's contract. The other trade that went down was Dakari Johnson being traded from the Oklahoma City Thunder to the Orlando Magic in exchange for Rodney Purvis. Purvis is a non-guaranteed deal and will be waived by the Thunder. This is purely a tax-saving move. Both these guys had identical salaries. The Thunder allegedly will be sending cash to the Magic. I imagine that the cash that they're sending, and it hasn't been reported that I've seen, the cash they will be sending will be equivalent to the Dakari Johnson deal, which is $1.5 million. So if the Magic decide to waive Dakari, that they, should be higher than the $1.5 million, so that when they waive Dakari Johnson, they can offset that money and then get somewhat of a profit. Because otherwise, there's literally no reason for the Magic to make this trade. Surely they're not doing it because they want Dakari Johnson as an asset. They have got Nikola Vucevic. They have got Mohamed Bamba. They have got Timofey Mozgov. They have got Kem Birch. So is Dakari Johnson coming across to be their fifth center when they need guards and wings badly, and they sent out one who in Rodney Purvis, who played a little bit for them last season and showed some flashes, but obviously wasn't fantastic. So surely this is just a move for them to acquire cash. So therefore, the Thunder would have to have sent at least more than the $1.5 million. I don't think they're keeping Dakari Johnson around, so they need to offset that cost and then pocket some profit for the ownership. Really very little happening. I thought Dakari did okay as the backup to Steven Adams last season. Nerlens Noel is in that role now. And Johnson, I thought he played well. He's played well in the G League, and maybe he finds a way to stick on a team at some point, at least get a training camp invite. Just a name to watch for those very deep leagues, but it's not going to be in Orlando. The Phoenix Suns were also part of another deal. They sent Rashawn Holmes across to Phoenix in exchange for cash considerations. We know that Holmes had been on the outer in Philadelphia. There is, to me, there's a lot of maturity issues with Rashawn Holmes. He cracks the shits, he sooks, he bitches, he moans, he complains. The Sixers have Jonah Bolden, who can play at the five. They've got Amir Johnson there as well. And of course, they have Joel Embiid. Now, I'm not going to bang on about this, but so many people were on the Rashawn Holmes, let's draft him, we have to draft him in fantasy last season. I wasn't, and it never made sense to me. He moves across now to Phoenix, and I get the feeling there are going to be some people who are out there saying, oh, you should take a flyer on Rashawn Holmes. DeAndre Ayton is their starting center. I think that's pretty clear. Holmes is fine. He had that nice run at the end of 2016-17 where he played well. I think he's a solid enough player. He has defensive issues, not a great rebounder, great shot blocker, energy guy, fantastic in that sort of a role. Could he be better than Marquise Chris and Dragon Bender? Absolutely he could be. No doubt about that. Tyson Chandler is still on the Suns. This is a team that pretends like they want to win games, and Chandler is a better option, even at his advanced age, at playing 18 minutes a night to help a team win. So I don't see Holmes coming, and I saw it written, you know, that Rashawn Holmes is going to be coming in and competing for minutes with Chandler and Holmes, which is nonsense. He's not competing for minutes with competing for minutes with Chandler and Ayton. He's not competing with minutes for DeAndre Ayton. They are not trading for Rashawn Holmes to be the starting center on this team. Sure, if someone gets injured, if DeAndre Ayton gets injured, I could see Holmes starting, playing 27 minutes per night, and absolutely being a must-own fantasy guy for that time frame. Aside from that, he's the third-string center on this team. His contract is still non-guaranteed, so in the end, they could decide to waive him if they wanted to. It's non-guaranteed until January. But I don't see Rashawn Holmes being this excellent asset. He played 16 minutes per game last year, only 48 games, 250th-ranked player. The year before, as I said, was excellent, 21 minutes and 111th. And we know that if he plays 24 minutes a night, he's going to be fantasy relevant. But getting to 24 minutes a night with Bender, with Chris, with Ayton, with Chandler there, who you could make an argument that all four of those ahead of him, and very comfortably two of those guys should be ahead of him, he's just not going to be getting that level of playing time with Phoenix next season. So I'm all for taking flyers on guys with my last pick with upside. This isn't it. Brandon Knight's the one. If he's available in the last two rounds, he's the guy in Phoenix that I take a flyer on because of that upside that, hey, they're going to start him at point guard. If he plays 32 minutes a night, there's top 50 potential there. It probably won't happen, but it's there. A guy like Rashawn Holmes, if Ayton goes down, if Chandler gets hurt, then maybe he plays 27 minutes, then maybe he can jump up. Yeah, of course, but it's a few things that do need to happen there for that to be the case. I don't envisage any situation where the Suns go, look, DeAndre, we're really committed to you, but you're going to come off the bench behind Rashawn Holmes. There is no scenario in which I can see that happening outside of an injury that sets Ayton back, or he just looks 100% shithouse. And even if he does, I still think they're going to be starting him over Rashawn Holmes. So don't get overly excited about this. I like Holmes. I think he can be solid. He does have quite a few warts in his game, and that's why he'll never be a full-time starting center in the NBA. And in this situation, you could make the argument that he is better than Tyson Chandler. I probably wouldn't make that argument just at this point. Chandler's old, we know that, but I think as a backup center, Tyson can provide more value than what Holmes does, especially on the defensive end, and with his ability to rebound. That's solid in that sort of a role, whereas Holmes just isn't quite at that same level that Tyson Chandler is at this point in their respective careers. Talking a lot there, obviously, about Phoenix centers, so let's talk about Alex Len, who comes across on a two-year deal to join the Atlanta Hawks. I've been a decent enough Len fan. I haven't liked the way he's been used in Phoenix at times, playing him at the four next to Tyson Chandler, always limiting his minutes. I thought that he was clearly the best center that they had on the roster last season, but they didn't play him. He was 187th ranked guy in only 20 minutes. Solid rebounder. Blocked a shot per game, which was at 1.6 per 36. Got his efficiency back up to 57%. Free throws are somewhat of a worry, but he moves into Atlanta now as the third big behind the Baptist John Collins, behind the Undertaker Dwayne Dedman. The questions will come, does this impact Collins? No, I don't think it does. Does it impact Dedman? Maybe. Dedman's a lot older than Alex Len. He's about 30. Len is 25. I think this could stop Dedman from playing 30 minutes a night. You could see a 25-minute, 26-minute Dedman, and then you could see 22 minutes from Alex Len. Behind them, there's really only the Wizard, Amari Spellman, and Miles Plumlee. So I think Len's going to get 20-odd minutes a night, and for 16-team leagues, that's valuable. Could he outplay Dedman this season? He could. I'm not sure the Len-Collins pairing together is all that good. It's definitely not as good as the Collins-Dedman pairing because of Dwayne's ability to shoot threes. Although if John Collins can continue what he did in Summer League where he was banging in 1.5 threes per game, then him fitting next to Len works a little bit better. Alex Len can protect the rim. He's someone that I'd be more inclined, if I'm going to take a flyer on someone in a last round, I'd take it on Len over Rashawn Holmes. I don't think it's likely to really pay off for you, but it's someone who's in the situation. If Dedmon ends up getting traded on an expiring deal and Len moves in and starts and plays 27 minutes per night, then yeah, there's something there. He still has problems with his hands. He still can take some poor shots at times, but I like his defensive ability. I like his ability to protect the rim, and I think that he has really been dicked around a little bit in the past couple of seasons. So we'll see exactly how he can go now heading into his sixth NBA season. Hasn't really taken big steps forward, but this, I'm still not completely out on him. It's unlikely to be a standard league type season though for Alex Len. Let's move on now and talk dynasty. I want to talk to you guys about setting up dynasty leagues. I've had many questions about this, about different ways to do dynasty leagues. We're going to talk about, if you're a commissioner, also if you're a player, how you approach initial dynasty drafts, ways to approach different types of settings in those leagues as well. So if you are in a dynasty league, or you're thinking about getting into one, or you're thinking about starting one, here's a lot for you, a lot of information about different types of settings, the pros and cons of these sort of things as well. And if you aren't in a dynasty league, I highly recommend you get involved in one. They are a lot more fun, I believe, than redraft leagues. A lot more thought process, trades are way more interesting, future planning, rookie drafts, all that sort of stuff. So a lot to really talk about with dynasty leagues. So let's get in and talk about a few of the things that we need to pay attention to when setting up a dynasty league. First one to look at. Do you want a dynasty league or do you want a keeper league? What's the difference? Well, to me, I always want a dynasty league. Although, in saying that, I am debating setting up somewhat of a keeper league this season. I'm still on the fence about it. I probably won't because I've got 12 dynasty leagues I'm running at the moment. But a keeper league, we'll talk about that. The dynasty league means that in theory, you can keep every player on your team. Now, there are different ways of being able to monitor that or police that. But in a dynasty league, it's basically like you are the franchise. You are a GM. You are an owner of an NBA franchise. So you have got your roster and you can keep them all. In a couple of the Red Rock dynasty leagues, the 30 team ones, there's no constraints. You draft your guys, you keep them for as long as you want. In some of them, we have real salaries. So, and a real salary cap, $103 million, the NBA salary cap is. We have that number and you have the player's salaries. Can you fit them in? If not, you have to cut them. But assuming you've got the cap space, you can keep them as long as you want. In another Red Rock Dynasty League, we have a fake salary cap, which was our initial auction budget, and players get signed to contracts, and you can sign them to two contracts, and after their two contracts, which are maximum of 4 years each, you can't re-sign those players. So in essence, you've got 8 years to keep a player maximum in that sort of a league. So that's what Dynasty is. Keeper is that you have a certain number of players you can keep. Do you keep two players? Do you keep one player? Do you keep four players? I'm not a big fan of those sorts of leagues. Again, I am looking at maybe doing one of them, so we'll see. I'm not massively into keeper leagues, but that's the difference. A keeper league is you keep four players. Now, how you go about setting up a keeper league and what penalty is there? So if you keep four players, does that mean that you lose your first four picks in the draft? Does it mean that you lose the round that that player was drafted in? Does it mean that you lose the round that player was drafted in plus one? And for every year you keep that player, you keep losing an extra round. So say you keep a ninth round player. In the next year's draft, you lose round eight pick. And then the year after that, you lose round seven's pick. And the year after that, you lose round six pick. There are different ways of fixing up keeper leagues. But a keeper league is a set amount of guys you can keep. You can't keep the entire roster. It might be two, it might be three. Majority of what, four, five, six, whatever it is. Majority of what I'm talking about here can be applied to keeper leagues, but it's definitely me talking with dynasty leagues more in mind than keeper leagues. I'll say this about keeper leagues. If you've got a league where you keep two players in general, and say you keep two players and there's no, it's not draft round based, you just lose. No, you don't lose draft picks based on it. You just keep two guys and then draft from there. You just keep the best two guys. I'm not necessarily worried about I've got a young guy who's going to be top 60 this year and he might be top 30 the year after that. If I'm keeping two players and there's no draft pick or round penalty, I just keep my best two guys. Simple as that. But Of course, then you could be, I got Donovan Mitchell in round 14. And if I lose a round 14 pick for him, then he becomes a guy that you keep in that sort of a scenario. So as always, with anything, in any sort of fantasy league, but you know, times a million for dynasty and keeper league formats, know your rules. Understand your rules, because there are lots and lots of differences that can make big deal. If you've got a team with Donovan Mitchell that you drafted in the 14th round, Steph Curry in the first round, and say Giannis in the second round, right? The decisions that you make there depend on what the rules are. Do you lose a draft pick of pick round 14 if you keep Donovan Mitchell? Then I'd keep Donovan Mitchell, say, over Steph Curry. I'll keep Giannis with my second. I'll keep Don with my 14th. And then my first round pick's still available. And you know what? With my first round pick, I can potentially just get Steph back with that pick. So that's the way that you have to really pay attention to all the differences and intricacies in your particular league. Written rules. If you're setting up a league, have rules. Write them down. Be prepared to change them, though, or be prepared to adjust them. Things will come up that you are not aware of. There will be contingencies that need to be written into these rules that you, when you're setting it up, that you didn't even think of. Now, I'm trying to cover a lot of those things here in this podcast, the things that you will need to pay attention to, but I'm not going to cover everything. I set up dynasty leagues, and the things that crop up, and I go, yeah, probably should have done that. In general, a commissioner should have the power to make rulings based on what's best for the league, even if it isn't written in the rules. Sometimes you'll need a vote. Sometimes there won't be a vote needed. In general, unless someone's blatantly cheating, which you can very clearly tell, I roll with it. You got to make decisions based on what is best for the overall health of the league, but have written rules, state what needs to be done, and then when things come up, make adjustments to those rules. You make those adjustments in those rules. Have what happens in the playoffs. Have what happens with the draft. Have what happens in free agency, with injuries, with roster spots, with categories. Have it all written down. Have your prize structure written down in these league rules. Have what happens with contracts, with salaries, with how long you can keep a player. What happens? Give examples in these rules. It's really important to have these written rules and everyone knows they're there. And also be prepared to update those rules when things change, when issues crop up and things need to be adjusted. As I said, if you're changing and adding rules, a lot of the time you need to give it time. So you want to introduce a draft pick penalty for keeping guys. You want to introduce a 10-year max on keeping someone in a dynasty league. Do it, but don't introduce it straight away. Come out and say, guys, for the 2019-20 season, this rule is going to be coming into place. There are some rules in that you don't have to necessarily give that change to, but in general, you want to go in advance with making those moves. Now, there are certain things which I don't think really should ever be changed. That's not completely true, but changing categories is a tough one. If you're changing categories in a league, say you went with 8 cat and you went to 9 cat, or you wanted to remove turnovers and put offensive rebounds in, whatever it was, if you're doing that, give it 2 years. Say, you know what, guys, I don't want turnovers in this league anymore. I want to put offensive rebounds in. You don't do it for 18-19, and you probably don't do it for 19-20. You say, in 2021, we are going to be doing this. I'm giving you guys 2 years to understand at the same time frame for everybody else. This is what's been decided by myself or by the commissioning committee, whatever it is. These are the changes we're making, but you've got 2 years to understand the change in this rule and to base your future draft picks, your trades, your waiver wire, to base all that on that. You've got time to look at that. Again, some things need rules instituted immediately, especially, which are a few of the other things I'll talk about later. But a lot of the time you need to give players time, give it 2 years to adjust to changes that you make in your leagues. Payment. I think that all dynasty leagues should have a financial component to them. You want people to have a stake in the league. I think dynasty leagues can run off the rails pretty quickly. If you're doing them as free, people will just, you know, sell off players. They won't take it seriously. It will throw the balance of the league out completely if they don't have any financial stake in it. Obviously, the larger the financial stake, the more careful people are going to be with their investment. So you find people who want to pay $100 a season. You find people who want to pay $500 for a season. the more money that people are putting into these leagues, the more invested they are in making the decisions. But of course, in that sort of a scenario, the more strict you have to be with enforcing rules, because there's more money involved, more money on the line in those type of scenarios. So you've got to make sure your rules are correct. You've got to make sure your commissioner or your commissioning committee is on top of everything that gets done, because, you know, certain things and certain loopholes can be exploited for those, for that cash. So make sure you're doing that. Now, I mentioned here on this thing, you pay in advance. This is something when I started my first lot of Dynasty Leagues that I didn't do, and I wish I had of. So all of my Dynasty Leagues now, this is the change that I've made for the new ones coming in, is when you pay the first two seasons. So it's $50 entry for a league. So you pay $100. You pay for this season, and you pay for next season. Again, it gives incentive for people to have a long-term view of these leagues. If you want to drop out, you have to be aware that you've already paid for next season in advance. And then when off-season comes for the 19-20 season, you pay $50 again for the 2021 season. You're always paying a year in advance to keep you going long-term. Now, if you want to pull out of a league and you give advance notice, the commissioner can say, okay, we'll refund you your $50 here or whatever. But if you just say, you know, I'm dropping out, I'm not here next season, then it, and your team is screwed, then you've forfeited that $50. It also enables the person who comes into those leagues to not have to pay for that first season. They're acquiring somebody else's team. And they get, okay, well, I've got this team. Let's see what I can do for a year. They don't have to pay for that first season. You've already got that entry fee covered. But it's a good way, I think, to get people committed longer term by paying those 2 years in advance, and also giving them, if they are looking to get out of a league, to give you some advance notice to perhaps, you know, perhaps deal with that extra fee that they have paid. If they're just going to pull out and leave you in the lurch, they are costing themselves money, and then getting someone else in to replace them, you don't necessarily have to get that person to pay for the initial season as well. So I think that is relatively important to look at when talking about dynasty leagues and the way you need to set them up. All right. Preserving the long-term integrity of a league. A lot of these things that I've mentioned are ways to do that. Having the payment in advance, having your league rules down. Something which I've instituted in all of my dynasty leagues, new ones and existing ones, is the Stepien rule. Now, if you don't know what the Stepien rule is, it's a rule the NBA instituted after Cavs former owner Ted Stepien traded away every future first-round pick the organization had. What this does is it does prevent or work to prevent teams from completely selling off all of their assets in order to win now by trading away 4 years worth of future first round picks. The Stepien rule is that a team cannot be without a first round draft choice in two consecutive future seasons. They can't be without it. So now we're heading into, in all my leagues, the rookie drafts are going to be taking place on the 2nd or 3rd of August. So that's that pick there. So if we're working the Stepien rule into these ones, if you don't have a pick in the 2018 first round, that means you can't trade away your 2019 first rounder, but you can trade away your 2020 first rounder. So you have to have a first round pick. You have to have them every second year. It doesn't have to be yours. You could have traded away your first round pick, but gotten back someone else's first round pick, and that is still fine. Again, it's about future first round picks. Now, once this 2018 draft is done, then we move forward to 19, 20, 21. And if you don't have a 2019 pick, then you have to make sure you've still got 2020 there, but you can trade 2021. So instituting a Stepien rule and policing it is a good way of preventing a team saying, I'll give you away my 18, 19, 20, 21 first round pick. And then they do it to acquire someone, they get injured and they say, I'm bolting, I'm leaving the league. And that person goes, oh, I've got no first round picks here. Right. That's the problem. So you have the payment for 2 years in advance. You have the Stepien rule. It does work to keep a team focused. And it also, if someone does bail on that team, it gives them some future assets. And keeping that long-term integrity, I think, is important in Dynasty Leagues, because you want these leagues to continue. One of my Dynasty Leagues heading into its fifth season, I think now, or maybe fourth season, got a couple others heading into their third. And a lot of leagues will burn out after 1 year, but getting all these things right initially is a good way to keep the leagues going for a long term. Rosters. I am all about having expanded rosters. Now, you can have a 12-team dynasty league. You can have a 14-team dynasty league. I've got multiple 30-team dynasty leagues. I've got some 16-team ones. I've got some 14-team ones. I've got some 20-team ones. But I don't think that you should be running any sort of dynasty league with a standard 12-team, 13-man roster. It defeats the point to me. It also makes a lot of teams really uncompetitive, especially if they say they're coming sixth and they'll just be like, oh, well, I'm just going to drop all these guys. I'm going to drop Lou Williams. I'm going to drop Tobias Harris. And I'm going to try and pick up these rookies, hoping that they become good. To me, the idea behind a dynasty league is not about churning the waiver wire. It's about making smart draft choices. It's about making smart trades, not about moving guys in and off rosters through the waiver wire. Sure, you can do it very similar to the NBA, where you can find fringe guys off the waiver wire. Hey, Rodney Purvis is available. Maybe I go pick him up. Can he do something? Perhaps. Ty Wallace was a guy I got off a waiver wire last season in a 30-team dynasty league, and that worked out well for me. But I wasn't in any situation where Jason Tatum was available on the waiver wire because I only had 150 players rostered. Or I could probably think of a better name than Jason Tatum because he would have been rostered in all those scenarios. So you don't have to have 30 teams. You don't have to have 20 teams. If you have 12 teams, go big. Give them 25-player rosters. Have your 10 starters. Have 15 guys on the bench. And therefore, you can make investments into the future. You can bank on your own future market-playing ability. Hey, I think this guy might be good. I think this guy might be good. I want to build for the future. I can sit him on my bench. I don't have to necessarily play them. I can have Jonathan Isaac here. I think he's got top 50 upside. But if you had a standard roster, then what the hell was he doing for you for all of last season? He wasn't doing anything. Oh, do I drop him? Do I move on? No. The idea to me of Dynasty is to be different to redraft. You're not churning the waiver wire. You're not going out and making four pickups per week. You want to have these guys on your team and you want to make them develop. I think having the bigger rosters, but also the big bench is important as well. And in general, when I'm setting up a Dynasty League, I want my bench to be as big as my amount of active players, if not bigger. If I've got 10 starters, I want at least 10 bench spots. I want the ability to have guys there that I can hang on to and develop in a dynasty type format without needing to play them every week or every day. I don't need to get guys in like Tyus Jones that I might have drafted 3 years ago waiting for him to get an opportunity. Dennis Schroeder, who I may have drafted when he was a rookie, and wait, then he gets that opportunity to be a starter. So I want big rosters, and I want big benches when setting up the rosters. I also want to make sure I've got lots of different things happening. Do I have injured reserve spots? Now, you could say that a large bench counteracts that, but I still want that injured reserve spot. I want a couple of them generally. I think those sort of things are important in having those expanded rosters. Minus slots. Now, this is something that enables you to be done on Fantrax if you're using other sites. Look, I think someone asked me a question about this and I was going to answer it later in the show. I'll talk about it now. If you're setting up a dynasty league, you've got no other option but to do it on Fantrax. ESPN and Yahoo give you absolutely zero functionality to do this. It requires a lot of dicking around to run through Google spreadsheets and docs and manually keeping a track of all this shit. Fantrax does it all for you. Minor slots, I think, are really interesting. I've got them in a majority of my dynasty leagues. It enables you, outside of your regular roster, to keep a spot for someone. Now, you can set whatever sort of criteria you want on that. On a lot of my ones, anyone who at the start of the season has not played an NBA game can sit in the minor spot. So, for this coming season, it's someone like Mohamed Bamba. You can draft him and you can put him in that minus spot. He won't count against my salary cap. He won't count against my roster limitation. He will sit there all season. Now, you can set it up different ways. You can be that as soon as he plays an NBA game, he has to come out of that minus spot. You can have it that it's the cutoff is the start of the season. So if he hasn't played a game at the start of the year, he can stay in minors all season. It enables you to draft guys like Nikola? Yeah, Nikola Milutinov, who the Spurs drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. He stayed in Europe. You can draft him, and you can sit him in the minor spot for 3 years. Doesn't take up salary space, doesn't take up roster space, and you can sit him in that minor spot. The other thing you can do is you can have an age range. Do you think that anyone under the age of 24 who has played under 100 NBA games, they can sit in that minor spot? No cap penalty, no roster spot. You can set it up whatever way you want, but it's another way of being able to stash guys who aren't contributing in the NBA. Hey, you want to look at the G League and have a look at a guy like Amir Jefferson or Troy Copain, and you see them, Antonio Blake, and you see them tearing up the G League? You think that there's a guy that probably should have been in the NBA that isn't? You want to take a flyer on them? Stick him in there. I really like the idea of a minus slot. One thing I'm doing this year in one of my dynasty leagues, a new dynasty league, is having the ability to draft players who haven't been in the NBA yet. College players, international guys. So what we are doing in that league is having a separate draft in December while the season is going of players who have not been draft eligible yet. So you are able to pick these guys out of college, out of Europe, out of high school, if you want, LeBron James Jr. You can draft these guys and you can sit them in your minors slot. It gives a different level of strategy there. Obviously, it reduces the value of rookie picks when we do the actual rookie draft, because in theory, this is the way I'm doing it is a 14-team league, and we're doing two rounds of college, and then we have four rookie picks, two rounds are college picks, and two rounds are regular rookies. So in theory, the top 28 guys will go with the college picks, and then we'll have the next 28 guys available with those rookie selections. Now, there'll be guys that fall through those cracks. So being able to work that out is an interesting thing. But you know, when we do that college draft in December, RJ Barrett's going to go really high. Cam Reddish, does LeBron James Jr. go? Does Zaire Wade go in this scenario? Where do you take a guy like Jontay Porter, who went back to school this season? Shamori Ponds. And you sit on them, and then you watch to see how they develop over the course of the college season. But the way I've set it up in that league is that you can only have two college, Europe, high school players on your team at any one time in those minor slots. And if you have more than that, then they go into the regular roster and you have to deal with the fact that they won't be playing for 1 year, 2 years' time and sitting them there. So it's an extra wrinkle having the ability to draft college players. Something else that you can consider when you're looking at dynasty leagues. The draft. Auction drafts are always the best, in my opinion. They're not always 100% necessary, but they're the best. Obviously, scheduling them can be tough. The length of them in dynasty leagues, especially when you go back and look, that I talked about, you want big rosters, you want a lot of teams. Those drafts can take ages. 3 hours maybe, 3.5 hours for your initial dynasty draft. But it's the best way of doing it. Especially if you are going to be doing salaries, not real salaries, but actual salaries, you have to do it based on, sorry, not real salaries, but you know, fake salaries. You have to do it based on an auction. I think it's the best way to do it. You could do it in a snake and assign a dollar value to every single pick. But in an auction, the best way, hey, you want to spend $65 on LeBron, then that $65 is his salary. A snake draft. You can do your standard snake. What I've done in a lot of my snake draft is done third round reversal, meaning that the team that picks first in round one will pick first in round one will pick last in round two, but also will pick last in round three. Instead of going back to first in round one, last in round two, and first in round three, round two and three are the same as each other, and then we go back to regular snake draft, first, last, first, last, first, last. So that's the way you can do the snake drafts to give a little bit more fairness to those teams who are picking at the end of the first round. Then they get the first pick in round two and the first pick in round three. I think that's a decent way of doing it. I also highly, highly encourage and strongly believe that you should have rookie-only drafts. In any sort of dynasty league, your draft picks the following year should be rookies only. Now, I know many leagues do this and they have it, and the majority of those picks are rookies, but then you can also put free agents in there. I do not allow that in any of my drafts or any of my dynasty leagues. That is for rookies only. Any veterans who are available on the waiver wire who have been cut to make room for these rookies, they go through a standard free agency process, whether that's waiver wire, whether that's free agent bidding. those guys are there. I don't want them in my rookie drafts. The drafts are for rookies. And that's exactly how I treat it. So in my, one of my leagues where we had an auction to start off with, and we have, you know, salaries introduced by those, by that auction value, we have our rookie draft. 3 rounds, 16 teams. We do our rookies, and then all the players there, the other players are available, and then we do a free agent auction every year to get those players. So we have two drafts, a snake rookie draft, or not some snake, a regular rookie draft, and then a free agent auction draft. In some of the other ones, we have our rookie draft, and then the free agents just go into free agency and you bid on them. Or they go into waivers and you go based on waiver wire position from the standings from the previous season. But I strongly, strongly believe that your rookie draft is rookies only. And by rookies only, it doesn't mean Harry Giles. It doesn't mean Nikola Milutinov. It doesn't mean Brad Wanamaker. If you wanted those guys, you should have stashed them before. And that's why you have large rosters, extended benches, minor slots. In all of my leagues, rookie drafts are for players who were eligible for the 2018 NBA draft. If you were eligible for the 2017 draft and didn't get drafted and played the year in the G League, but now you're coming up onto an NBA roster, you're a free agent. You're not part of the rookie class. Even though you'll technically be a rookie in the NBA, you're not part of that class. Harry Giles, you're not part of that class. So when I do dynasty rookie ranks and someone says to me, oh, where would you put Harry Giles in there? I wouldn't, because he's not part of the rookie class. So therefore, he should have been drafted last season, much like the year before. Ben Simmons would have been drafted in dynasty leagues the year before that. I don't see any scenario where a guy like Simmons would have just been floating around in free agency and now is a part of a rookie draft. I'm not basing this on the NBA's definition of a rookie. If you were available to be drafted in the NBA, then you should have been drafted in a dynasty format. So rookie drafts to me have to be guys from that year's draft class. Now, they don't have to have been drafted in that draft class. They could be like Trayvon Duval, who was undrafted. They could be like Rolly Hawkins, who just signed a two-way contract with the Chicago Bulls today. They weren't drafted, but they're still part of the rookie class, and they are the players that should be picked in those rookie drafts, in my opinion anyway. The draft, the rookie draft. I think it's imperative that you have a draft lottery. Now, my leagues, we had a draft lottery mirroring the NBA draft. Top three picks, same odds. I didn't like it. It seemed to, people still seem to tank their asses off, sell away assets, you know, bench guys, which is not something you want. So what I have done in all new leagues and changed the ruling in a lot of them, is it's different now. It's not a lottery for the top three picks. In some of them, it's for the top four. In most of them, it's for the top six. So if you finish with the worst record, you might not even get a top six pick. And the odds are flattened out. I'm not 100% sure on if I did this exactly, but the teams, you know, 1 through 10 worst records have the same odds. 1 through 7, whatever it is, 1 through 8 have the same odds. So if you finished last, second last, third last, fourth last, you've got the same odds at a top one pick, top six pick, whatever it is. Trying to eliminate that really deliberate tanking stuff. Now, building for the future, acquiring future assets, trading away your players is fine. No problem. That's a completely viable strategy. But sitting everybody in order to get this number one pick, it's not something that I'm a massive fan of. And these sort of things you institute, and again, if it's part of the rules where, hey, whoever finishes with the worst record gets a number one pick and someone says, screw you blokes, I'm not playing someone all season. If that's not part of the rules, then they are completely within their rights to do it. Now, you should go in and rewrite those rules and make that change. Absolutely, you should make that change. And this is what, you know, I think you should do. Expand your lottery, top four, top five, top six picks. Keep the odds much flatter. Like the NBA tried to do, I went even harder on doing that. So then, you want to go sit your blokes and forfeit your $50 entry fee for this season, that's fine. You might get pick 7 and end up with poo. Who knows what you're going to end up with? You might not have a high pick at all. So that is another way of really trying to again, you don't necessarily, you don't need to say to everyone, everyone needs to be competing. You all need to be in for the championship. You don't need to say that. That's not what I'm getting at here, but you need to, I believe, have something in there where people aren't just sitting all their players. And again, but if that's part of your rules and someone, if that, there's no rule against that in your league and someone does it, don't bitch about it in season. Make the change. But again, when you're setting up a league, make the rules initially. And these are things that I've come across over the past couple of seasons. Player retention. Talked about this before, you know, keep forever guys. That's fine. Real, you can have real salaries and a real salary cap. That's pretty self-explanatory. And in real salary cap leagues, getting players on cheap contracts is massive. A guy like Donovan Mitchell on his contract is a top five guy probably in a real salary league. Because there are only so many players with top 20 value who make under $5 million. For the past couple of seasons, Nikola Jokic has been the absolute god of those leagues. Top 10 production on $1 million is amazing. But of course, now he's paid $25 million, so that value goes away. But if you get a guy with a real salary that's really low, that's getting you that high level production, it just gives you so much more buffer space. And it also means that these other guys, other teams aren't going to be able to afford players. So you're going to be able to get at pick 200, a player who maybe is a top 70 guy. So getting these high value guys, again, Donovan Mitchell is probably the best option here. Lonzo Ball, Jason Tatum, yeah, to a lesser degree, John Isaac, but they're paid a little bit more with that top end rookie scale. Jarrett Allen, John Collins, these guys on $1 million, 1.5, 1.8, $2 million, who are top 50, top 20 type of players for three more years, it's massive and they should go real high. You know, having Jarrett Allen and John Collins as top 20 players in a real salary startup, Donovan Mitchell as a top five guy makes complete sense because everyone else will fall because they won't be able to fit all these players into their salary caps and you'll be able to pick up these guys. You might be able to find someone who's on a $15 million contract who's not necessarily a great player, but you might be able to get them 50, 60, 100 spots later than what they probably should go. Because you took that cheap guy early on. Now, in terms of salaries and contracts, yeah, just work out what you want to do. I said earlier, we had four-year contracts with the ability to extend those players for another 4 years. But the kicker is in that league is that the league salary cap started at $400. Every year, the salary cap rises by 5%. But player contracts rise by 20%. So if you keep everybody, you're going to be well over that salary cap really quickly because the player contracts are expanding at four times the amount of what the salary cap is. And you don't have to be as aggressive as that. You can keep the acceleration rate the same. You can do 5% for salary caps, 7% for contracts, and have that little creep up there in order to get a little bit more player turnover going. But that is a good way. If you want a league where there is more player turnover, having salaries and having contracts, you can have one or the other, you can have both. That's a good way to get that going. You can institute a salary cap and just have it, you know, without contracts. You can just have, okay, well, here's $200. You got to fit within $200. And, you know, you can have penalties for cutting players. We have a penalty in that if you cut a player in that league on his contract, you have to pay that full amount goes against your salary cap for this season. And if they're on a multi-year contract, you pay 50% of that the following season. Now, it's not like the NBA where it goes the entirety of their contract. So if they've got a four-year contract and you want to cut them, you can take 100% of the hit for this year, 50% of the hit for the next season, and you don't pay any more further there. So it's a good way to save future money. But that you could also do it, you cop no salary cap hit. And that does get, you know, player turnover going a lot more. The other thing I think you need to do in a league where there is contracts and salaries is that if those players get cut, what I do is during the season, if they are taken off waivers, they are signed to a one-year deal. You can't sign someone off waivers to anything more than a one-year deal. And the money that they get paid is whatever money you spend on them in FAB, free agent auction budget. So we have FAB setting. And if you put $3 on them, you get them this season for $3. But at the end of the year, their contract expires. And they go back into the free agent auction draft that we have every September. Contracts. I'm starting a league this year with restricted free agency as well. So, why not? I should bring up the rules of how I'm actually doing that. But, you know, the rookies that you bring in, you have them for their initial few years, and then they go into an auction setting. So people bid on them, and then you have the right to match that bid if you so choose. And that's a longer process that will take quite a bit of time, but it's an extra layer. You can keep that player if you so choose, if you match that contract amount that they get bid up in an auction process. So that's something to pay attention to as well. So a lot of different things that you can do there. Salaries and contracts do get player turnover accelerated as opposed to just straight keep forever. What else have we got here? Salary escalation and real salary. I talked about that already. That was my next dot point. Schedule integrity. The larger your league is, 20 teams, 30 teams, the harder it is to keep balanced schedules because you don't play 30 weeks, 29 weeks. You can't play everybody. So therefore, a team might be favored by going against. They might have 8 tanking teams on their schedule and they get a boost that way. Now, in the end, it is what it is. This shit happens all over the NBA. It happens in all sports. It doesn't happen in all sports because some sports, you know, play each other twice. In our settings, we can't really. But even then, you play, say you're playing in the Premier League where they play every team twice. Not every time that you play those teams is equal. You might get a team at one point who is limited or really struck down by injury or has packed it in for the season because they're in no chance of playing in Europe or no chance of being relegated. So they're not trying as hard. This is all stuff that happens. But a way of being able to, I guess, mitigate some schedule integrity issues is an option that Fantrax gives you. And I'm introducing this in quite a few of the new Dynasty Leagues. And that's multiple matchups, meaning that every week in a head-to-head league, points or categories, whoever you're playing against, you play multiple teams. So me, I play against Kyle's team, but in the same week, I play against Matt's team. And you could also do it that I play against Greg's team as well. It probably works best in a weekly lineup type setting because trying to make daily changes to battle against 3 different teams, oh, I need points in this one, I need rebounds here, that can be a real head scratcher. But in a weekly lineup, I set my lineup for the week, I play Kyle, I play Greg, I play Matt. And you see how that works out, meaning you get to play against all teams during the season. I think it's a good way of doing it. With those larger leagues, with head-to-head category or points types formats, I'm playing against multiple people each week. It evens things out. It makes more fair the schedule and the schedule inequities that are there, especially in those deeper leagues. So look into doing that. Fantrax gives you that option where you can play multiple opponents per week. Again, doesn't really work as well with daily changes because trying to work that out can be a real pain in the ass. But in a weekly lineup, which again is probably a good way to go about Dynasty because we're not really looking at the day-to-day minutiae of all this. It's longer-term planning, building up your team long-term. I think it's a good way of being able to do it is having those multiple matchups. Going to answer a few questions that people did ask through here to me. The first one comes from @WarriorWaves. And his question is, I want to know what website is the most friendly for Dynasty basketball. How do you decide who gets what picks for the following year? I've already talked about that. He said, I've been kicking the tires on this subject for a while, so I'm looking forward to this. Well, I'm glad you're looking forward to it, Warrior Waves. I've said it already, Fantrax. Fantrax handles Dynasties just a million times better than ESPN or Yahoo. You can do the multiple matchups. You can do salaries, whether that's converting auction price to salary, whether that's using real NBA salary. You can use contracts. You have as many years on those contracts as you want. You can trade for future year draft picks. You don't have to keep a track of this on Excel spreadsheets. You can set up, hey, I want to trade 8 years in advance of draft picks. I want to have that option. How many rounds do you want to track? You can do all of this on Fantrax. You can do 3-team trades if you want. You can have minor league slots. You can have 30-team leagues, which you can't do on ESPN. And I don't think you can do on Yahoo either. You can expand your roster. You can have a 100-man roster if you want. You can do all these things on Fantrax. You can't do them on the other sites. There are more categories that you can do. You can do 2-point percentage, which you can't do on Yahoo. Also, Fantrax doesn't close down. You know, ESPN and Yahoo, the site shuts down. You can't make trades. You can't look at rosters at certain times of the year. ESPN took about 3 weeks last year to add Marshawn Brooks to their system. Why? Why did it take so long for him to be there? We saw that plenty of times with Hassan Whiteside when he burst back into the league. He wasn't in their system. Fantrax has all these guys in their system, has college guys in the system. This is the site that you need to be using for a dynasty league. Every single feature that you could pretty much want is on there. I hate Fantrax. They don't have an app. I don't give a shit about their app, really. Just use their website. It's mobile friendly. Use it on your phone. It's not as intuitive if you've been using Yahoo or ESPN. It's a little bit different. It's not that different. But in terms of setting it up, you cannot compare a dynasty league on Fantrax versus ESPN or Yahoo. You can't compare it. It's literally, there's every single option that I have talked about is available there, as opposed to what you can't do any of this shit on ESPN. You can't track someone's contract. You have to have a commissioner dedicated to updating a salary cap sheet. You're monitoring this. Will the trade go through? Hey, this trade's not going to go through because it's going to push you over the salary cap. Fantrax does it all for you. You can trade future picks, include it in a pick. In ESPN, how I'm going to send this pick, but now I've got to email the commish to tell him that he's sending me a 2021 second and I'm sending him a 2022 third. And then you've got to update that in a sheet. It's all there. It's all there on Fantrax. You can see who's got what picks. It is 100 times easier. I could not recommend it enough for setting up your dynasty leagues. At RoMitchell1209 says, how best do you structure the roster and transaction limits both weekly and yearly from a commission perspective in a head-to-head league to keep the savvy GM winning but not force everyone to make transactions every night? Well, I think I've touched a little bit on that, Robbie, throughout this situation. Weekly matchups is a way that you can do that. You know, having the larger rosters means that you don't have to be churning through the waiver wire every single day. The savvy GMs are the ones who are making the smart trades, who are making the smart draft choices, who are, you know, valuing these decisions rather than someone coming in and just spamming and just grabbing guys and churning through 4 or 5 pickups every day. So, you know, I like weekly transaction limits in standard leagues. You know, you can make 4 pickups for the week. I like in dynasty leagues making your roster bigger. Hey, you want to have 12 teams, 10 active players? Fine. Give them 20 bench spots. And then there you go. Then you don't have to worry about that. It's about making the smart drafts and making the smart trades, not just who's staying up till midnight Pacific to go and grab the guy that comes off waivers first and doesn't waste their waiver priority. That's the way that I would be doing it, personally. At Abby 8 Pizza, Abby Whitman. She says, when in a 30-team dynasty league, what is a good strategy for your first pick? Do you go for a younger guy or somebody more established? Now, Abby, my thought process in dynasty leagues is I treat them pretty similar to a redraft league when doing an initial draft. Because I will guarantee you that Luka Doncic, DeAndre Ayton, Wendell Carter, Mo Bamba, Trae Young, these guys will all get picked significantly higher than what their contribution is going to be this season. Doncic will go in the top 20. Donovan Mitchell will go in the top 10. Jason Tatum will probably go in the top 10. Now, they could all be those guys. It might take them 4 years to get there. Or they could be like Tyreke Evans, who was the rookie of the year and then did nothing else after that. They could be like Markel Fultz, who may have been taken in a top of the top 20 pick last season, and then finish outside the top 300. And we just don't know if this shot is ever going to come back. I want established players. In the past 7 years of 8 category fantasy ranks, in the past 7 years, there have been 24 different players in the top 10. So that's 70 spots, 7 years, 10 spots. And they've been filled by 24 guys. They have been filled in that, and 7 of those guys were drafted in that 7 year period. I think it was Kawhi Leonard, Yanni, Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard, Victor Oladipo, a couple other guys who were drafted in that period. So if you drafted in that 2011-12 dynasty season, there's been 17 guys available in that draft who have been top 10 guys. Not really changing that much, is it? It's the same guys consistently there. And you look at the top 10 from last season. Like, who there is excessively old that's probably not going to be there? Anthony Davis is 25. Is he going to be a top 10 guy for the next 6 years? Probably. Jim Harden is still 28. Is he going to be a top 10 guy for the next 4 years? Probably. Steph has just turned 30. Is he going to be a top 10 guy for the next 4 years, 3 years? Maybe. LeBron is 34. Okay, maybe you can make the argument LeBron might fall outside the top 10 in the next couple of years. Yep. Durant is 29. DeMarcus Cousins is 28. Yanni is 24. Yanni's 23. Towns is 22. Lillard's 28. Oladipo's 26. That's your top 10. So those guys could all conceivably stay 4, 5, 6 years in the top 10. Yanni, Towns, Davis, Harden, Oladipo perhaps, Lillard. These guys could be there for multiple years. So this is not to say to not look at youth players, but guys stay fairly consistent for 3, 4 years at a time. You don't know what the hell is going to happen in 3 to 4 years' time. So I am not someone who's taking a rookie at pick 20. They might have top 20 upside, yeah, sure. But they won't get their first year, might not get their second year, and there's so much unknown. Hashim Thabeet was taken pick number 2. Anthony Bennett was taken pick number 1. Do you look at those guys and go, yeah, I've got to spend a top 50 pick on them in dynasty leagues? You've blown it. When in that same time frame, you could have taken Al Horford, you could have taken Paul Millsap with that pick and gotten 6 years of top 50 production out of them. That's the way I want to go. Now, when I get down to an area, like I got John Collins in a dynasty league, a startup dynasty league, I think at a pick 90 last season. Happy with that. Yeah, that's totally fine. But early on, I'm really, really cautious. People are going to go nuts. I can guarantee you people. And when we do the startup for these dynasty leagues that I've started this season, I'm going to be really interested to see where Doncic and Ayton and Carter and Young and Bagley, where all these guys go. Because almost assuredly, it will be too high. And fine, in 4 years' time, they might be these guys. They also might not be. NBA draft is far from a 100% accurate type scouting scenario. So they might not work out at all. But if a bloke's put up 3 consecutive top 30 seasons, I think I can probably get another 3 out of him. I'm okay with it. I'll take that and then I'll work it out from there. And so many people try and go young early. If you skew the other way and go, you know what, I'll take the 28, 29, 30-year-olds. I'll try and win the next 3 seasons, then I'll work it out from there. That's the way that I try and approach it. I would not be jumping the gun and going hard on some of these guys who, you know, you might have taken that on Josh Jackson. Oh, man, he's a top 40 guy. Definitely, I'll take him top 40. He might not ever be a top 100 guy. Like, it might not ever. Again, and you could have got Al Horford in that spot. You could have got many different guys in that area. So that's the way that I tend to skew when looking at those selections. Ryan Jones, at Ryan_Jones, similar. What to do with rookies? In general, those top rookies, I will generally leave them to someone else because they will go way higher than what they'll produce this season and probably what they'll produce next season. We can have all the confidence in the world in Ayton, in Doncic, in Carter, in Bagley, not in Bagley, in Young, in Bamba, in Michael Porter, whatever. Someone will go too high on them. I can almost get, and while it's sexy and fun to have a rookie, you could have taken Fultz, you could have taken Jackson, you could have taken Fox, you could have taken any of these guys last season, you could have taken Ntilikina. And these are all top 8 guys, and you wouldn't have been happy with it. So while I love having a rookie, and you could potentially have 10 years of top 50 value, odds are saying you probably won't, unless you hit the right guy. Maybe that is Wendell Carter. I think that there are 4 or 5 guys out of this rookie class with top 25 potential. Doesn't mean they'll get there, but they've got top 25 potential. It's all about value propositions. Are you getting the right value for these guys? is taking Luka Doncic at pick 14 value? Will he ever, ever peak at pick 14? Maybe, but probably not. He might have five top 20 seasons, but he might never get to pick 14. Whereas Kawhi Leonard might be available at pick 14, and he might have five top five seasons in a row. Just be really, really cool. I'm not saying to avoid rookies. I will take rookies. But taking them at the right spot for the right value is important. In those first couple of rounds, it's very, very unlikely to be the right spot. If Marvin Bagley falls down and he's available at pick 90 for some reason, because people are going, he was shit in summer league, which he was, I'd take him there. I'd take that upside proposition. No problem. I would do that. You know, is, who else is available? Is Wendell Carter falling to pick 100? Probably under no circumstance. But if he's there, 100%, because I think he's got a chance of beating it this year, and he's got that top 25 upside. But when people start smashing him in and taking DeAndre Ayton at pick 19, and picking Trae Young at pick 30, I'll say, you know what? Not for me, guys. I'll let it go a different direction. That's a whole bunch of stuff on Dynasty Leagues, on setting them up, on different strategies. Tomorrow is going to be my top 72 rookies for Dynasty Leagues. There's always, and with a lot of, they're bloody close to each other, depending on how your team looks, contending, rebuilding, where you're looking at stuff. We'll change the value of a lot of these guys, but it's just me attempting to recalibrate after some things we've seen, some summer league performances. Not the be-all and end-all, but it does give us something to at least base it on. So tomorrow's show will be that, and then more summer league recap stuff to round out the week. Go and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, especially Locked On NBA, which I hosted today's show. So go and check that out, as well the rest of all the individual team shows across the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball as well. Go and follow this or subscribe to this podcast on YouTube. Give me a thumbs up. Smash that subscribe button below. And you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Tobias Harris.